Hi there, it's Nick here. Thanks so much for your continued support of the Nick Luck Daily Podcast. Now, I know I've urged you on more than one occasion in the past to check out the racing app. And if you're a fan of US horse racing, as you know I am, never has this been more important, because the US service on the racing app is truly terrific. Not just the cards, very easily accessible for the day's racing, but also the video past performances, which are available completely free of charge, irrespective of any betting accounts, but also available at just one click. It's all there at your fingertips. If you are not resident in the United States and are a massive fan of American racing, this is the place you need to be. The Racing App. Download it today. You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis. By the Racehorse Owners Association. And by the Racing App, in partnership with FitzDares. Good morning, welcome to the show. Wednesday, April the 10th. We are getting ever closer to the Randox Grand National 2024. The fixture begins at Aintree tomorrow. And although it is a sunny day here, there's more rain forecast on Merseyside today. The ground getting softer and softer. I've just put in a call to Gordon Elliott, multiple Grand National winning trainer, to ask him whether he is going to run everything bar Conflated. We heard yesterday that Conflated wouldn't run in the Grand National, letting Kitty's Light in at the bottom. He says yes, everything else will be declared. There is no reserve system. That means that Galvin will be declared, even though owner Ronnie Bartlett earlier in the week said he wouldn't run if the ground was worse than good to soft. That's the news from Gordon Elliott. News yesterday, interestingly, came as regards the jockey bookings for JP McManus's quintet. Everyone assumed that Mark Walsh would have a choice and that he would probably choose Iron Maximus or maybe Meeting of the Waters after the gamble earlier in the week. Not so, as I welcome in Lee Mottershead, senior writer from The Racing Post. Lee, what happened yesterday? One or two surprises?
Mark Walsh, as JP's retained rider in Ireland, we assumed would have the choice of mounts. But as you say, Frank Berry, JP's racing manager, spoke to Connor yesterday and revealed that Mark Walsh would be riding the Mayor's Chase winner from the festival, Limerick Lace, with Paul Townend returning to the back of I Am Maximus, and Danny Mullins riding Meeting of the Waters, as he had at Leopardstown over Christmas. And there was interesting insight in Frank's quote. He said Danny got on well with Meeting of the Waters at Leopardstown. It was a tough decision for Mark, but he went for Limerick Lace. Paul was riding I Am Maximus, but Mark could have ridden any of the others. Now, the obvious way to interpret that is that Paul Townend was always going to ride I Am Maximus, and there is logic in that. We know he's a difficult horse. It wouldn't be at all surprising if if Willie Mullins had suggested that it would be handy if Paul rode I Am Maximus. Again, he was superb on him in the Irish Grand National.
Yeah, I'm spot on. And it's worth noting, actually, when I spoke to Willie Mullins on the podcast a couple of weeks ago and said, oh, won't Mark Walsh choose I Am Maximus? He sort of hummed and hawed and said, well, wouldn't he like to ride Cappadano? Then maybe that was an indicator of things to come. Either way.
Even if you put to one side the I Am Maximus situation, you look at the way the market has gone in recent days, and Meeting of the Waters is now as low as 7-1, 9-1 in a few places. One bookmaker saying today it's been a massive gamble on the horse. Limerick Lace is still as big as 20-1, even after the news of Mark Walsh making that decision. And Mark Walsh, don't forget, didn't actually ride Limerick Lace at Cheltenham.
Well, one man who will be very pleased at Mark Walsh's decision, no doubt, even though the decision didn't include I Am Maximus, is Gavin Cromwell, who trains the festival winner Limerick Lace. And she's one of those really intriguing runners because you're not quite sure where the ceiling could be, or indeed where the ceiling of her stamina could be. Gavin, what do you think, and how did you react to yesterday's news?
Yeah, listen, happy, obviously. Mark sat on her a few days ago. She jumped a few national fences down at the Curragh, and she jumped well. And obviously, he got the right vibes.
Mm. And do you feel in your bones that she is a stayer rather than a speed horse?
Well, I think she needed every bit of the 2.5 in the mare's chase. She stayed 3 miles well in the Troytown, although she got beat. She was second. But listen, it's a big stamina test that. And listen, it remains to be seen whether she'll stay the Grand National trip. But I'm hopeful and confident that she will.
And she seems sensible, for want of a better word. I don't want to damn her with faint praise, but she seems an efficient type of horse that's not going to do anything too exuberant.
Yeah, she's absolutely. She's a little bit mare-ish, but out from that, she's good. I think she'd take the prelims fine, and she jumps well, so she takes plenty of bosses.
So in you go with hope, if not expectation. Another mare is Melina Girl. Now, she's right on the cusp. If she does get in, she'd probably be the last one in. She's at 36 at the moment. Talk me through your thought processes with her at the moment.
Yeah, obviously we'd love to run. I don't want to get in because the ground is heavy and others don't want to run, you know, so it's a little bit of a catch-22. She is only small and, you know, I would prefer the ground to be better rather than heavy. But listen, we'll see. I'm going to get over there early tomorrow morning and I'll walk the track and we will make a decision if it's a decision that has to be made, because it will probably be, the likelihood is it'll be made for us anyway. Mm. So, but listen, we'll try and get it right anyway.
But you're not going to run just because she gets in. You won't declare her if you think the ground's unsuitable.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
Vanillier will be there with bells on, I'm sure, last year's runner-up. How hopeful or how confident are you that he can run at least the same race again in terms of his well-being?
Yeah, he is in good nick. I'm as happy with him this year as I was last year. Ground is obviously different. But listen, we know that he's taken to the fences, and he jumped a few of them the other day in the Curragh as well, and he's in good form, and with a bit of luck and running, I think he could run a similar race.
That was Gavin Cromwell, who could be three-handed in the Grand National. What will have intrigued most people there, Lee, was the fact that he wasn't guaranteeing that he would declare Melina Girl, and therefore, given that she's right on the cusp of getting in, that'll have people thinking, oh, might I have a chance of getting in? Desert Moor House, particularly, we spoke to Martin Brassler, is one place below Melina Girl. Looks like that horse may have a squeak of getting in. Now, below that, you've got Kinondo Quetu. I spoke to Sam England this morning. She's, in her words, 6 2/3 about running, even if she does get in. Suspect she'd probably be forced to, but the horse doesn't like heavy ground. If she decides not to declare, then you're looking at Shake 'Em Up Harry. Well, Shake 'Em Up Harry's not going to run because he's going to be declared for the Topham, and he can't do both. And then you're looking at William Gordon, Seventh Strings. And then you're down to Chris Gordon, Zaniel Invictus. But I think we're into the realms of the very unlikely there.
Yeah, I think we have headed in that direction. If we think that was a possibility, I'd be really surprised, Nick. I was struck by how positive Martin Brassler was about Desert Moor House on the pod. Certainly got me thinking about him. Ronnie Bartlett had said a few days ago that he wasn't planning to have Statler or Galvin declared unless Good to Soft was in the going description. That seems highly unlikely, bordering on impossible, at the point at which declarations will be made tomorrow morning for the Grand National. I can't imagine that Good to Soft will feature in the going description on the Grand National course. I'm in the Northwest at the moment. It's dry at the moment, but we had a heck of a lot of rain yesterday, as they did at Aintree.
Well, there may be six fewer runners this year, but there aren't six fewer stories, I don't think. David Maxwell riding Ain't That a Shame has got, I think, got a little bit under the radar this week, given the horse started 10-1 last year and was a runaway winner of the Thyestes last time. Anyway, the rider is with me now. Okay, so how well acquainted have you become with Ain't That a Shame since the purchase, Dave?
Well, I went over to Henry's to ride him a couple of weeks ago, and yeah, lovely horse. Got on with him well. He's a good jumper, very solid, and yeah, he seems to have plenty of vim left at 10 years old, a bit like me at 45.
Well, absolutely, and he was a massive plunge for the race last year when Rachel Blackmore rode him and seemed to have an obvious chance. He's not in any worse form now. Yet he's 6.5 times the price. Has Rachel told you why he didn't finish a bit closer, having travelled so well last year?
No, I haven't spoken to Rachel about it yet, but I will before the race. I think from what Henry says, he's in better nick this year than he was last. So I mean, aside from the fact that I'm riding him, that's the only diminution in his chances, I think.
I do appreciate sometimes you might add a point or two to a price, but I'm not having you adding 56 points to a price, I don't think.
Well, the market tells you what the price should be, Nick, so we can't argue with that.
Yeah, and you'd know more about markets than I would. In terms of your levels of anticipation, I watched an interview with you the other day at Ludlow after you'd ridden a winner, and you said, I am refusing to think about it. I am refusing to get myself too excited. As we draw closer, can you give me a window into the Maxwell mind?
It's the same strategy, really. You know, you don't want to get sweated up going down to the start, so I'm not thinking about it. I tell you what, I am very excited about the first division of the bumper at Market Rasen this afternoon, where I've just been listening to the Radio 4 Today program, and I was the racing selection.
They never win, though. I mean, Gary Richardson's leaving, and somebody said, "Well, hopefully the racing tips will get better."
Oh, they always win. I mean, it's a sure thing now.
This is the Alan King project, isn't it, that runs at Market Rasen today?
Yeah, he's quite a nice horse.
Okay, maybe one for Grand Nationals in the future. When do you wait, 51-year-old David Maxwell? Yeah, when he.
I know that is not a possibility because my wife has excluded the chance of me still being riding in 8 years' time. So maybe 7.5 years' time. So yeah, it might just sneak in under the radar.
Is that it? Is that it? Eight. Tessa's put the deadline at eight years.
Well, I said I probably won't be doing this in 8 years' time. She said you definitely won't be doing it in 8 years' time.
Good.
So we know it's not 8 years.
All right. Well, he'll get there in 7 years. You've also got the small matter of Cat Tiger in the Fox Hunters to contend with. Run very well in the race before, not getting any younger. Any sort of a squeak?
I don't think really. This isn't his ground. He needs it. He needs pretty quick ground because he just, you know, he needs to bounce off it. He's not over. And, you know, he just needs to be, he needs a firmer surface, I think, probably than there's going to be at Liverpool. But on the flip side of that, Ain't That a Shame needs it as bottomless as possible. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy enough with the ground the way it is.
And it's no bad thing
to, for Cat Tiger.
Yeah, no bad thing to get your eye on either. How many times have you completed the course at Aintree? Quite a few.
Yeah, I think 3 or 4 times. I seem to remember having a horrible fall and, you know, nursing a damaged shoulder on the way back on the train and trying to carry my racing bag back. So I've definitely fallen off around it before.
Okay. Well, best of luck this weekend, Dave. There'll be plenty of people cheering you on.
Thanks, Nick.
David Maxwell there. He's riding at Market Rasen today and then Aintree tomorrow and Aintree Saturday. The Corinthian spirit is not dead, Lee, for sure. Ain't That a Shame? He's not a complete no-hoper.
No, he's not. Well, he can't be because he's a Thyestes Chase winner. So he can't be a complete no-hoper. That said, if you look at the price he is this year compared to last year, what was he, about 10-1 shot last year?
He was a massive gamble on the day, wasn't he? Massive Rachel-inspired gamble on the day.
And you can see why. I'm pretty sure I backed him as well last year. This year, he's 66-1. And I think anyone who looked at last year's race would have said Ain't That a Shame was a textbook non-stayer. And if he didn't stay under Rachel Blackmore last year, is he going to stay under David Maxwell this year? That's not meant to be an insult to David Maxwell, but if Rachel couldn't get him home, can David Maxwell? I would be surprised.
Okay. What about how many people are going to turn up at Aintree this week? There have been some quite encouraging noises coming from Aintree the last couple of days about slightly better attendance than perhaps at one stage was expected. And we've heard quite a lot about how it's taken people a while to sort of pick up the thread in terms of, you know, advanced bookings for Cheltenham, Aintree, Epsom and so forth. But it seems now as though Grand National Day is a sellout in the grandstand. There's a little bit of room on the embankment. Thursday is going to be up on last year, and Friday is going to be probably on a par. It's a little bit down at the moment, but the bookings apparently have picked up this week. So there are some noises of encouragement emanating from HQ, it seems.
Yeah, I think that is good news, positive news, Nick. Re-sales. I was looking yesterday on the Aintree website, and there still appeared to be quite a bit of availability for Grand National Day. And even this morning when I was chewing a croissant, there were tickets available for £85 in the festival zone, which, if I've got this right, it's the area that gets you access to the watching the race on the track and the paddock and the winner's enclosure, but doesn't actually get you a grandstand position. That was still available. Looks like that's not available now. So I think while Grand National Day has maybe sold slightly slower in that sense than last year, it looks like they're in a healthy position now. And also on Thursday and Friday, I think the Thursday and Friday days, particularly the Friday one, have maybe been a little bit down in recent years post-COVID than they were at points before COVID. If you look back to, say, 2012, there were 54,000 people at Aintree on the Friday. Last year, there were 47,000 people, but still very solid numbers. And in light of what we had at Cheltenham, when after a huge slump in attendance from 2022 to 2023, there was a further drop from 23 to 24. And we know what impact that has had on the Jockey Club, with significant cuts to or a cut to prize money exec contribution, as Nevin Truesdale discussed on the pod earlier in the week. In light of all that, this has to be welcome news, albeit the Jockey Club's income from the Grand National Festival isn't what it is from the Cheltenham Festival. Just looking at the meeting as a whole, Nick, as well, I thought one of the things that interested me was that even on Saturday, when the Jockey Club was putting out its own comms in relation to the opening day of the meeting, the first three Grade 1 races on Thursday were all unsponsored at that point. So the Manifesto Novices Chase, the Anniversary Hurdle and the Bowl, none of those at that point had sponsors. Now they do now, so the Manifesto is being backed by Close Brothers, the Anniversary has the name of Boodles attached to it, and William Hill, who sponsored the Aintree Hurdle on the card, are now having the sponsorship of the Bowl Chase. Now that's interesting, particularly in light of your conversation with the Jockey Club's Matt Powell, whose responsibility all this is during the Cheltenham Festival, and he laid out reasons why the sponsorship situation might not be as obvious as it would seem to us, and why it was maybe reductive to look at race sponsorships per se. That said, I thought that the point that you made to him in that interview, Nick, was if you have no sponsor attached to a race until relatively late, and then there is a sponsor attached to the race, does that suggest it's pretty much been given away? Well, we won't know what the situation is here, but I still find it hard to believe that had the Jockey Club got a sponsor in place for those three Grade Ones, they wouldn't have had the sponsor's name attached to the race in their own comms on Saturday.
Yeah, I think it's, and it's a point I've made internally and externally, and made in that interview to Matt, is that the Jockey Club will tell you that a centralized strategy and partnerships, for example, with My Pension Expert or Aston Martin or whoever, that is the kind of way forward, and that is what's going to make the bottom line look more attractive. But I think the point I made to him was that you can't do that at the expense of keeping your local business engaged with your track, or even not such local business, but business that is generated by those close to say Aintree Racecourse or Cheltenham Racecourse or whoever. It's that balance between central and regional, and it's a balance that needs to be struck effectively, I think. And the other point is that, as you say, nobody knows how much you've you've sold these sponsorships for, it is not, I don't think, even if commercial partnerships are the way forward and race titles are less meaningful than they used to be, if that's you want to buy into that line, I still think it doesn't look as though your product is a high value product if you go in with lots of unsponsored races. And that's quite important, because otherwise you start shorting your own stock.
I think that's right, Nick. I think the optics of having no sponsor named for three Grade One races 5 days before those races take place isn't positive. One thing I would say that is positive, looking at these Grade Ones on the opening day of the Grand National Festival, is that all four Grade Ones have their handle within the race title. This is something that Lydia's spoken about a lot on the pod. It's something that's been a bee under my bonnet. The manifesto, the anniversary hurdle, the bowl, and the entry hurdle are all named as such in the race titles. If you rewind back to the Cheltenham Festival, you had far too many Grade Ones where that didn't happen. With the Gallagher Novice Hurdle was run as that, not the Gallagher Bearing Bingham. The Brand Advisory was run as the Brand Advisory Novice Chase. Brackets, again, registered as a Broadway as opposed to the Brand Advisory Broadway. Even the race that had been known as the Ballymore was run as the Gallagher Novices Hurdle, registered as the Bearing Bingham, as opposed to the Gallagher Bearing Bingham, the Turners on the Thursday. I don't like that, Nick. Racecourses will justifiably, I suppose, say that in a hard, difficult commercial sponsorship environment, some sponsors will simply want to have their name in the race title, and they won't want it to be bothered, encumbered, challenged by the race handle. But I think it's really important, if we're telling the story of these races to fans, and if these races are to really have historical meaning, that they need to have a name that is used when those races are being discussed and not stuck away in brackets. If you look on the flat, all flat Group 1 and Group 2 races have to have the race handle in their main name, not in brackets. And yet we don't treat our top jumps races with the same respect as we treat our top flat races. And I see no logical or fair reason for that.
Now, if you have not been listening to this podcast, if you have not been watching the racing, or indeed if you have just landed from Mars, there is a possibility that you have not heard about the horsepower campaign, which has now been active for over a week and is a project that was put together by the British Horse Racing Authority, Great British Racing, with the full support of the independently chaired Horse Welfare Board and with some support from the Jockey Club as well. Now, I'm very pleased to welcome to the podcast today Helena Flynn, who's the Programme Director at the Horse Welfare Board. Helena, this has met with almost universal industry approval. This is no time to pat ourselves on the back. This is time for me to ask you, as the Programme Director for the independently chaired Horse Welfare Board, what you think is the most important message to have come out of this so far.
Thank you, Nick. It's been a fantastic response, and we're delighted to see how the industry has kind of gathered together, galvanized around this campaign. It's incredibly important, but the work starts here. You know, the most important message about this campaign is openness and transparency. We know as an industry, that's what the public expect from us. That's what the industry, even our industry colleagues, want from us, is to, you know, talk to the work we're doing. And I guess in the role that I do, and certainly the Horse Welfare Board, the important thing now is the proof points that underpin this campaign. We very much see this campaign as the umbrella, as I said, that unites everything. It's the one-stop shop. But now it's about, you know, really bringing to life those proof points of welfare that the industry as a collective have been working hard behind the scenes to bring to life.
It might just be worth touching upon how many projects you are working on at the moment that the Horse Welfare Board is working on concurrently.
Yeah, it's been a busy time, and I have to caveat this does not represent the totality of welfare work that's going on within this industry. This is just purely the Horse Welfare Board work is currently, from a Life Well Live strategy, there's 26 projects that were defined in there, looking at all areas of traceability, aftercare, data and safety, most importantly, and communications. Of those 26, 23 are either live or fully delivered. So it's been a busy time.
It has. In your view, what should be horse racing's absolute number one priority in this area?
Well, Nick, we do our regular research. We know the things. We know the things that they are that's the barrier to engagement in the sport. You know, the public continue to tell us when we do our research. It's, you know, it's fatalities, it's injuries. It's they still have concerns around the whip. So it's so important, and it's the essence of this campaign is addressing those issues head on. You know, the team, you know, we've been looking alongside our industry colleagues, looking at safety. How do we reduce fatalities? How do we reduce serious injuries? And there's some key projects underway that underpin that work. You know, in particular, and I know we don't have a whole heap of time today to cover 26, but if I just touch on some of the really important ones looking in the safety space, we've got the JRRM work that's ongoing. The JRRM, it's a really important piece of work. It's a 3-year collaboration with the Royal Veterinary College, and it's developed, you know, it's a model that provides statistical evidence on risks and reducing risks in jump racing. You know, this is all incredibly important. We have a busy week ahead, as you well know, with Aintree. And it's, you know, this work has been led by the Equine Safety Steering Group. And some key focus areas has come out of the report of that. You know, they're looking at everything from fallers, field size, schooling opportunities, and return to play. And the next piece in that work is looking at a fallers project that really kind of looks at how we can prevent falls, looking at that kind of prevention side, and when falls do happen, what can we learn? Coupled with that, we've got the fatality review that's ongoing. This is incredibly important, led by James Gibbon and his team, which looks at, you know, Nick, my background is aviation, and one of the things we do in aviation, we don't do a lot of things well, but one of the things we do incredibly well is looking at you know, when incidents happen, how do we learn from them? How do we apply that learning to ensure it reduces risk and makes things safer? And with this kind of analogy in mind, that's looking at the fatality review. It's a constant review of every fatality that happens on race course. It's analyzed by a group of experts. And then we discuss them. We discuss them. What are the learnings? What can we take forward? This is a pilot review that's going on for a year. So a really, really important piece of work. So that constant continuous improvement. I learned early on, Nick, that there's no silver bullet. So it's not one thing that's going to be the game changer, but we need to continue the focus on reducing fatality and serious injury.
Helena, I appreciate your time this morning. All the best with the continuing work that the Independently Chaired Horse Welfare Board is doing.
Lovely. Thank you, Nick.
And all I can really add to what Helena was saying there was, if you haven't visited the website, please do. In this week of all weeks, if you've got a few minutes, just take a moment, www.horsepwr.co.uk. You'll find all the facts around horse welfare in racing. And in a week where you might get hit by some misinformation, this is absolute accurate information explaining exactly what we do as a sport to care for horses. If you're buying and breeding horses, how do you know you've had a good day? I'll tell you how you know you've had a good day. You've got a horse you've bred that's won the Group 3 Prix Prudence and is now a fancy for the Guineas of at least one flavour for Godolphin. And a horse who's finished second in the Prix Jebel has just given your pedigree a massive update, having bought the dam for a song last December. That was the day that Joe Burke had, and Joe is with me now at Osiris Breeze Up Sales and presumably trying to do a bit more good business. That'll do, Joe. If it all carries on like that this year, you'll be quids in.
Yeah, no, it was very good. I don't buy a whole lot of horses, so it was lovely for something like that to happen. Yeah, and you know, we bought the dam of the Prix Imprudence winner as well, and to I suppose to co-breed it was great. And then yeah, bought Carasona as well for a very, very nice man and good friend of mine, Anthony Kerwin. And yeah, she got a nice update as well when the colt was second in the pre-jib of him.
Yeah.
He won't have the winner to worry about in the poulains because he's a gelding, so you never know. We might get lucky.
Yeah, the winner of the Jebel was Lazat, trained by Jerome Renier, continuing his amazing run. But Kerran will go to the poulain, as you say, Aga Khan. Bred colt by Blue Point. As far as the winner of the Prix Imprudence was concerned, Romantic Style, now, you bred your mare Sweetie Dream to Night of Thunder, and I'm guessing you got in before he was a complete sensation, did you?
Yes, he was 25 grand, I think, that particular year. So, yeah, we bought the mare, I still can't believe. We bought the mare, she was Group 3 winner. She won the Premiesque as a two-year-old, and she didn't kind of go on at three, and the owner put her in foal to Ken Darjean, and we bought her as a three-year-old with a late cover to Ken Darjean. And to be honest, I kind of valued her at 350 to 425, and she was unsold in the ring. We bought her for 130, which I found hard to believe. Now, I must say, I wouldn't have been able to afford her at 350 to 425, just to be clear. But yeah, we bought her, and we had the first foal out of her, and we kept her, and she won a listed race for us. So we were at the Curragh, so we were very lucky. We raced her, and we missed a year then because of the late cover. And then the second foal is a filly that won yesterday by Night of Thunder. Yeah.
Wow. And what's happening now in the pedigree?
So we had an Earthlight that we saw last year in book one for 160 grand, and then she has a Space Blues colt who's very nice, and we decided to keep him until he was a yearling, and she's in foal to Memas. She's due any day now, actually, and yeah, we'll see. She's probably coincidentally either going to go to Night of Thunder or Blue Point, assuming we have a safe foaling and all goes well.
I feel we might be having this conversation again during the course of the season. Joe, wonderful day, well done.
Brilliant. Thanks a million, Nick.
All right, that was Joe Burke. Lee Mostead's still with me. What a day for him. What did you make of those trials in France yesterday?
I'm not sure they're necessarily going to tell us a lot, Nick. I thought the Imprudence was a better race. Romantic Style did the job well, beating Romachu well. But I think Charlie Appleby was pretty clear. He doesn't think she would stay a mile at Newmarket, and therefore she'll go for the Pouliche at Longchamp. Ramachuel, if you backed her for the 1,000 guineas, I don't think you could be any more confident or hopeful about your chances after that race, albeit you're probably not much less hopeful or confident. One thing I would say from yesterday is it maintains a very positive start to the season, including with his three-year-olds, by Charlie Appleby. And bearing in mind how his three-year-olds disappointed last year, that has to be encouraging and welcome.
All right, it's time for the weekly review from the point-to-point scene, and of course, a look ahead to a rather important Hunter Chase this week, brought to you by Thoroughbred's Points to Rules bonus, which dangles a £5,000 carrot for any pointer sold through Thoroughbred that goes on to win on debut under rules. Joining me to discuss all things point-to-pointing this week is Sam Davis-Thomas from the Pointing Podcast. And Sam, we do have a Thoroughbred sale at the end of April that we need to alert people toward first.
Yeah, the next sale is on the 30th of April. We'll, of course, keep you updated with all details and entries for the big day. Entries are now open. They close on the 18th of April. Consignment is totally risk-free. No sale, no fee. It's as simple as that, really.
All right, so let's start then with a horse who won on his first start for a new yard that was bought through Thoroughbred for just 1,200 quid. The Hills have done it again.
Madness, really, yeah. Joe alarmed me to this last week. Yeah, Caldwell Diamond won the Open at Paxford on Easter Monday. Bought from Gordon, having won a maiden hurdle previously. Never jumped a fence in public prior to his start at Paxford. Joe said, and I spoke to Joe earlier, and he, you know, the Hill team were really fairly confident about his chances. He scored great, showed the right signs, and what the form quite equates to, I'm not 100% sure, but you know, he won very impressively. He won by 15 lengths. He could be a good fun horse, and congratulations to them. Really a great buy, and you know, another feather in their cap.
Caldwell Diamond, not the most high-profile Caldwell horse to come out of the Gordon Elliott yard, but one that might do very well for the Hill team, who've done so well over the years. And it was announced yesterday they'd lost a great stable servant, I saw, Clondore Westie, who'd carried at least one ride around the Fox Hunters and had won under rules for any number of decent jockeys. I know that will come as a great loss to them. So our thoughts with you on the loss of Clondore Westie. He was a splendid horse and ran around the Aintree Fox Hunters and finished fourth. And of course, it is the Fox Hunters, still called the Fox Hunters, at Aintree this week. And the British are looking to complete a double in the race, and there's a much stronger UK-trained hand here than there was at Cheltenham, even though the Brits won the Cheltenham Hunter Chase.
Yeah, I completely agree. Obviously, with the Antipodes favourite coming out yesterday, Famous Clermont, unfortunately, Chris decided that, you know, the ground not playing to his strengths. You know, they didn't want to pull him around. Will felt at Wincanton that was the main reason of the defeat. He might have to punch us down now, or could even go under rules and look for a handicap maybe at Punchestown. But yeah, the two Irish horses now head the market. It's on the line. And Animix, obviously it's on the line. Another thoroughbred purchase for 8,000. Rancy nominated very close at Cheltenham. She now has the Scottish National, which would be great to see. He's not the strongest of travellers, so this short trip won't ideally suit. But, you know, we're going to have some really testing conditions. And I think that will play to his strengths. And then the other Irish horse to just quickly look at is Animix as well. Obviously, William Patrick. He's got some form in the book. He has beaten Billaway. He's beat Ferns Lock, but that was back in April 23. His jumping is questionable, to be honest. But yeah, you've got to respect the horses from Ireland coming over.
All right, where's your money going? I mean, we had the Sine nominee tip from a long way out from Ben, so no pressure. Where's your money going this week at Aintree?
My money, probably, if I was going to go for a big price horse in the race, I'd go for Rebel Dawn Rising. One nicely at Fakenham. Travels really strongly. It's from a good yard, David Kemp, ridden by an exceptional pilot, and Dale Peters as well. He's got the right profile, I think, and he's probably unexposed at 25-1. I think he's got a really good chance. Close up to the market, Spyglass Hill's got an obvious chance. He was another thoroughbred purchase by Jerry McGrath, by Reggie Bayliss. He's trained now down on Jack Tudor's farm down in Wales. He won the Walrus really nicely on really heavy ground. The ground's going to be in his favour. James King takes a ride, who's riding out of his skin at the moment as well. He's got a great chance.
Loads of horses who come from the British Point to Point Field who've done well, who turn up at Aintree this week, Ahoy Senor and Santos Blue and Below the Radar. The most famous, of course, is going to be Late Night Pass. If he runs a big race in the National, just how much of a boost would that give British Pointing?
Oh, it's unbelievable. You know, the story behind him, you know, the National always creates a story. And for a horse to come through the ranks like he has, to then go on win a cross-country race is superb. And as Pip, the breeder, has said, you know, her dream was just to win a point-to-point. And to get to the National would be a massive, massive feather in their cap, and for British point-to-pointing as well. You know, it's a great story, and we wish them all the best.
Nice prospect, I thought, in the point-to-point bumper at Exeter. Sam, tell me a little bit more about Prophecy.
Yeah, trained by Les Jefford, ridden by Anna Johnston. Regular rider Callum Pritchard was actually banned that day, but Anna only having a handful of rides under rules. I thought she'd give him a lovely ride. He was a little keen early on, but she was very patient, and the front two pulled well clear. The second horse, Mount Mason, from the Newman Yard, who are absolutely flying at the moment. They pulled a long way clear, and I think they're probably two real nice horses going forward. The third horse I mentioned to as well, he did probably a little too much on the front end, and he kept going to chase them home. But no, Prophecia, really nice young horse.
And it's been a struggle with the weather, the pointing scene this season. A lot of horses just aching for a run and aching for the ground to dry up a bit. You have got two meetings going ahead Saturday, Hornby Castle in Yorkshire and High Easter in Essex. Two on Sunday, Eastrad Owen in Glamorgan and Cotley in Somerset. More abandonments, though, and you could be looking at under 100 fixtures throughout the year.
Yeah, we could, yeah, which is not great in the grand scheme of things, to be honest, giving people opportunities to run. But some people might look on it as a negative. I personally think, you know, we've had some really competitive racing for the public. The crowds, you know, Easter weekend was quite quiet for Easter, but the crowds are huge. The racing was really competitive. It's kept the championships, you know, alive towards the end of the season, which, as we've seen under rules, is great. It really adds an extra spice. And I think it's, you know, we've got to look on the positives the best we can. It's been wet. It's a bit wet for everyone. But there's some great stories coming out of it, and it's really competitive.
Sam Davis-Thomas there, and I'm sure everyone wishes Late Night Pass the Ellis family and Gina Andrews best of luck in the Randox Grand National. Now, the segue I always enjoy the most, from the point-to-point fields to the bright lights of Sha Tin and Happy Valley. Here's the croc.
Nick, the selected runners for Hong Kong's Champions Day on April the 28th were announced a few hours ago. 35 runners across three races for prize money totaling in excess of £7 million. There are 11 internationals, including three from Britain. William Haggis sends Dubai honour for the FWD QE2 Cup. Archie Watson has Brave Emperor in the FWD Champions Mile, while George Bowie sends Believing for the Chairman's Sprint Prize. Of course, they are engaging what could be perceived as a sporting challenge, because they come up against a trio of Hong Kong megastars, namely Golden 60, who's aiming for a fourth win in the Champions Mile, Romantic Warrior, the Cox Plate winner, who's aiming for a third win in the QE2 Cup, while California Spangle, fresh from his triumph in the El Quaz in Dubai last month, goes for the sprint. Two of the biggest talking points will be the impressive Hong Kong Derby winner Massive Sovereign, sourced from Ballydoyle, who has a crack at Romantic Warrior, and a new import to Hong Kong, an Australian three-year-old, Little Bros, who won the Group 1 Blue Diamond in Melbourne last year and has joined David Hayes. He lines up against California Spangle. The three races take place in 18 days' time. The countdown has started to this huge Hong Kong International Race Day. More to come on that in the 2 weeks ahead. Golden 60s jockey Vincent Ho returns to action today at Happy Valley, where there are nine races. And Vincent comes back after nearly 3 months out through injury, 77 days to be exact. He injured his neck and hand in a nasty fall on the all-weather at Sha Tin in January. Well, he's back and he's riding in race eight. He's only taken the two rides, actually. In race eight, number four, Noble Pursuit for Casper Founds. This horse sat very wide throughout in a race over a mile and a quarter last start. Comes back to the mile here, will be better suited and is better drawn. So I think race eight, number four, Noble Pursuit has a very good chance, but you must take him in a tote swinger with number three, Simply Maverick, who's a good type, was thought of as a classic type, didn't quite measure up to that, but is still well handicapped. So race eight, number three, Simply Maverick, and number four, Noble Pursuit, take them in a tote swinger. If you're looking for a good thing, in race four, number one, Co-Partner Prance for Francis Louis and Zach Purton. Going particularly well, carries top weight, will start short, but should win. That's all on the Hong Kong beat this week. I'll have more for you next week.
Well, with all that in mind, Croc, and thank you very much, I did put in a call to Harry Herbert, a boss of Highclere Thoroughbred Racing, to ask him about Believing's audacious bid to become the first European to win one of the major top-level sprints in Hong Kong. I said to him, Fortune favoured the Brave.
She's very smart, and she's improving at a rate of knots. I mean, you can see that the way she's, you know, done physically from three to four. I saw her this morning. She looks absolutely fantastic. And she's, you know, she's training very well. And I mean, so well that, you know, George was kicking himself. He hadn't got her, didn't put her in the sprint in Dubai on Champions Night. And just sort of said, well, look, here's something I think we should seriously consider. So we, you know, having looked at it and looked at the prize money and looked at what the Hong Kong Jockey Club do to, you know, get you there and back and all the rest of it, we just thought, well, why not? You know, her next race, you know, would be a Royal Ascot. So, you know, she'd have plenty of time to recover from the trip. But she's a very professional filly, and as I say, she's training in the style of an animal that's, you know, come on a fair old bit. You know, now she's fully mature.
Yeah, no pun intended. But the trainer always seems to have had a lot of belief in her, and you know, he's trained you a classic winner, and he knows exactly the time of day. Yeah. He always his estimation of her always seems to have just slightly been in advance of her achievement. Does that give you hope that there is more to come?
Yeah, I'm sure there is. And I think sort of, you know, it was pretty brave to supplement for the Haydock Sprint Cup. But the same sort of thing was happening then. She was working really well, doing well, thriving. And she showed that, you know, she was drawn sort of slightly away from the, you know, the first and the second and eventual first and second. And, you know, she was only just beaten. I mean, she, you know, very nearly won the race. But it's the way she travelled, and even on very, very soft ground on Champions Day, the Champions Sprint at Ascot, you know, that's not her ground, but she travelled, you know, almost last off the bridle. Mm. So she's got fantastic natural speed. You know, I think that it's very, very hard to take on, obviously, the, you know, the Hong Kong sprinters in the backyard.
But then you look at ratings and, you know, you sort of think, well, if it means anything, you know, we've got an improving sprinter, you know, we should be having a go at a race like this. And maybe we'll, you know, I hope we will never regret it, but we'll, you know, it's a bold move and it's running for massive prize money, paying down to six or sevens and, you know, the whatever it is, the 1.2 million... you know, sterling to the winner, and something like 600,000-700,000 for the second. So, you know, it's a wonderful trip. We put it to the share owners, and there'll be something like 16 or so, you know, 15 or 16 going, which just shows you, you know, that having a horse and travelling internationally is incredibly exciting. You know, we've been fortunate over the years at Highclere to have had some good ones that we've been able to do this with, you know, winning races in Germany and Turkey and Ireland and America and, you know, all over. So it's, here we go, off to Hong Kong. And I think with an animal that's going to be going to really make her presence felt this year. I mean, hopefully it'll happen in Hong Kong, but you know, whatever happens, I've no doubt that she's you know, she's going to be a potent force in the sprints this season.
And Harry, she was a Tattersall's Breeze Up purchase, the Craven Breeze Up sale coming around very soon on the 15th and 16th of April. You've also had Cache, your Guineas winner, and Spycatcher out of there. I presume you are busy scouring the catalogue for the next good one.
My nephew Jake Warren, who you know is incredibly talented at, well, buying yearlings as well as Breeze Ups, but the Breeze Ups he really has, you know, excelled at. And yeah, he's he bought this. Philly, we're talking about Believing, the year after he'd bought Cache. We had to dig a bit deeper for this daughter of MacMass, but she, you know, was an absolute queen, breezed beautifully, and I think we paid 110, something like that, for her. He's got a, you know, he's got a great eye for these breezes, and Spycatcher, as you say, as well. So that's three, you know, Group One performing animals. It's some record, you know, we will be there scouring what's on offer, and hopefully pulling the trigger on, you know, one or two.
All right, thanks to all my guests today. Lee Mottershead is still with me and has a tip for you.
I do, Nick. I mentioned a second ago that Charlie Appleby has made a good start to the Core Flat campaign. Nobody has made a better start than Richard Hughes, who is in sensational form, and I'm tipping him to have another winner in the 2 mile handicap at Kempton tonight at 8 o'clock with Thinadin, ridden by Finley Marsh. Was progressive last season, won first time out as a 3-year-old, and I'm hoping the horse can win first time out as a 4-year-old tonight in the 8 o'clock at Kempton, Thinadin.
All right, Lee, thanks so much. Thank you very much for listening. We will see you again tomorrow. Bye for now. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing App in partnership with FitStairs.